Welcome to this 265th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thank you for listening. I was going to talk about cholera and leprosy and typhoid fever and whooping cough. Why don't we get them anymore? Why are we so afraid of this new virus called COVID? We're not even afraid of the flu anymore. And it probably has to do with the way our immunity has changed and we've evolved over years. But I'm not going to talk about that because I think you probably had enough of that over the years. So, or over the last year. Yeah, it seems like years. So over the last couple of months for sure. No, I want to talk about why I think eating plant-based will reverse heart disease, diabetes, hypertension, probably decrease your risk of cancer or getting cancer back, and I think it'll also improve the quality of your life. And I believe this without ever having read a randomized, controlled, placebo-controlled trial. And I'm practicing this in my practice. And so far, nobody's come to take my license away. And over the last 5 years, I've probably seen more people get better than I did in the first 25 years or 20 years of my practice. I'm starting to lose count about when it actually or how many years I've actually been doing this. But I finished my fellowship in cardiology in 1993, so you'll have to do the math. But I wanted to talk about, you know, why I've come to do this. And I guess if I look, you know, I saw it for myself, the potential benefits. And then I looked to people like Dr. Esselstyn, who, you know, actually did the trial with 25 people and took interest and saw them every day and called them and then repeated it with 100 people. I've looked at Dr. McDougall, who helped people when he was practicing medicine in Hawaii and in Northern California, and the people that he's helped in his immersion program since then. Dr. Goldhammer, who has people to his fasting clinic, and then they leave plant-based and how they've done very well. Dr. Ornish has published studies showing people doing quite well on a plant-based diet with regards to cardiovascular disease and prostate cancer. And then I had to take the lunge and do it myself and implement it into my own practice. And I'm a practicing physician, and I see people in my office every day, and we have nutrition classes, and we go running together. But the reality of it is I'm a practicing physician that takes care of cardiology patients as well as internal medicine patients. And it's people that have come to me that are somewhat the champions that are taking the risk to go against what the normal treatment is out there to actually try this plant-based lifestyle. And since we've implemented the changes, again, we've seen people reverse their disease. It's not been easy. And again, these people took a big leap. They went for treatments that weren't necessarily believed by their original physicians, and they took a chance. They didn't like how they felt and how things were going the traditional way, and they took that leap of faith that sometimes went against their family and their friends, and they've done quite well for it. And sometimes it's hard to believe that somebody actually even has enough courage to do that, because again, the majority of people don't. 96% of the people don't ever or haven't changed to a plant-based diet, and they look and they might see some merit in it, but they try to find all the things that are more difficult about it or bring up all the questions, and they don't eat that way. And for the people that do make changes, it's not easy. You know, again, they've had to abandon some friends. Family gives them grief. Some friends give them grief, try to tempt them. And they're not without having relapses, just like any other, even, you know, would you say an addiction? You know, if you think about the Skid Row Marathon guys and Dr. Judge Mitchell talking about, you know, the people that it's a struggle. It's a struggle to change how you were to something different as an adult, whether it's giving up alcohol or, you know, a drug, or changing radically the way you eat in a society that eats completely different. And so people struggle, and not a lot of people talk about that. You see the success stories where people, you know, drop 200 pounds and they're doing push-ups and running 100-mile races, but the day-to-day struggles are often left off of social media. It's only the success stories that get all the hits. We have people that have got off of their insulin, but when they, you know, we tease about it in the sense that we call it going off the wagon, so to speak, like in the Wild Wild West, you know, when you fell off the wagon. You know, as long as people are eating their vegetables and whole grains and their greens, they do okay. But if they eat pasta with, you know, some oily sauce or trail mix, then their glucoses go back up and they require insulin again. It didn't completely eliminate their glucose intolerance. The underlying factors are still there for a lot of people. They still have problems with their insulin receptors in the muscle and the liver. The kidneys of hypertensive patients, as well as the blood vessels, are still salt sensitive. So when they get into a high salt diet by going out, perhaps getting into some chips or pizza with a salty tomato sauce, their blood pressure goes up. Sometimes traveling on vacation and being with friends and, you know, getting into one thing after another leads to their blood pressure going up. Sometimes that volume can result in people having arrhythmias because fluid retention ultimately stretches the volume in the heart, stretches the heart muscle, and can lead to arrhythmias in people that are predisposed to that. So it's not, you know, what someone would say, a cure that you can go back to doing things like you did before. I don't think we can ever turn back the clock to make people a 10-year-old where they can eat Hostess Ho-Hos and Fritos and not have a problem with them. But that's not what we're really after. We're after quality of life and the absence of chest pain, the normalization of blood pressure, the decrease the risk of stroke, decrease the risk of cancers coming back or recurring or starting up or growing to the point that they're a problem. That's kind of what we're after. And so keeping that in mind, it becomes a more of a lifelong struggle, and especially bad for people that try to keep their feet in both camps with the hope that they can go back to when they were a 10-year-old. And I think a lot of people that are observing see that as a failure, that see, you know, you can't ever eat Haagen-Dazs again because it will cause you to have the same problems that somebody that, you know, still has those problems can't either eat that stuff. But I don't think that's really fair. I think that it's a reality that you can turn off the progression of these diseases, halt them in their tracks, and live a great and pleasurable life eating whole foods, plant-based. I think the question that everybody needs to ask is, why is it important to you? What's your passion? What gets you up in the morning? What makes you want to live? What makes you want to live healthy until you die? I think that we all have to have that. I think there's always an opportunity for people to be counted on. I think sometimes we forget that. It may be such that our kids are grown and out of town, or people are retired, or I don't know what, you know, people lose their sense or their sense of purpose. They've done everything. I've lived a good life. There's nothing else I want to do. I think that's a bit of seems like a cop-out, but it may just be a sad state of affairs when they've really maybe forgot the true reason why most of us get pleasure, and that's helping or serving others. So most industries, most of what people do during their working career is to advance society, help others, whether it's teaching, healthcare, entertaining, some sort of service industry. And there's always a need for some of that, no matter how old you are, to have that sense of purpose, what drives you to want to be healthy. And I think that people forget that somebody is always counting on them. And there's always the potential to be counted on. And the biggest example that I have of that is, I had a 101-year-old lady. She passed a couple of years ago. But she took care of her mentally and physically challenged grandson until she was 98 years old. It's been on a previous podcast when I dedicated it to Winnie. She saw that as her pleasure, not as her duty. She loved her time with her grandson. And it just goes to show you that no matter what age you are, you can still take pleasure in your surroundings. I had another patient in her 90s that took great pleasure in gardening and painting for others. And again, it is the perception of your worth and your passion and what you do for others that helps to drive you to get up in the morning, but also helps you to, hey, I have to stay healthy. And this is what drives me to want to eat well so that I don't have any of these lifestyle diseases, so I don't have to spend my days in the doctor's office and in the hospital. I think people mentally feel more poorly when their physical health is such that now they only can focus on themselves. They can only see their pain and they can only see their suffering, and they're no longer contributing to other people's well-being. I think that leads to one of the greatest depressions and downhill spirals for people. And then it becomes, lack of self-care. And that's when I put nutrition high on that list of it doesn't matter what I eat. I just eat to survive, or I'm going to eat what gives me pleasure as opposed to what will fuel my body and take care of me so that I can serve others and do better and have a sense of purpose. Doesn't always have to be a human. It can be an animal. I know a lot of people that take great pleasure in rescuing animals or raising animals to be guide dogs for people, giving rescues a home and a new lease on life can be very rewarding as well. So it doesn't necessarily have to be service to a human. It can be service to non-humans as well. The people in my practice that have been very successful at becoming plant-based and getting healthy all seem to have that sense of purpose and that sense of wanting to help other people and to share something with them, whether it's grandkids or service to others for through the making quilts or reading to people or their jobs that they have, fitness instructors, yoga instructors, teachers, serving their community. It all stems, and it all leads to them wanting to be healthy in order to do their passion. They love what they cook. They enjoy all of their meals. They do not feel like they're sacrificing what they eat in order to serve others. They feel as though what they're eating helps them to serve others. This quarantine has been especially hard on a lot of people because it's taken them out of their ability to serve others. It's taken teachers away from teaching. It's taking, childcare workers from taking care of children. It's taking people away from their family and caring for their family or seeing their family. It's taken people's sense of why they do things, whether it's boating or running or traveling. It's taken all of those things away from people right now. It's been quite isolating, and I think that is particularly difficult in maintaining health. You hear more and more suicides, more depression. We have some people in the practice that have struggled to keep eating plant-based. They've gone back to their candy and comfort foods because they are depressed and they don't see what matters anymore. And part of that is because we've had to not have the nutrition classes in the office, and they've lost their sense of community and being with other people. And we've done them on Zoom, and that's been okay, but it was nothing like having nutrition class back in the office. Here in Florida, and in this particular county, they've done a face mask mandate, so it has limited our ability to continue with the nutrition classes for the, hopefully it's just going to be a couple of weeks. I'm not going to go down the road of, social responsibility, but I don't think that wearing a mask is really, it's going to make me a better person in the logbook over time. I think that they're not effective. Everything goes out the side and through them. And I don't see that isolating, especially in situations where it's really important to get people together, is in the benefit of anybody. And it has been particularly difficult, with some of our members. So you have people in assisted living facilities that haven't left their room, haven't got to see their family, and it's been very, very difficult on them. And they lose a sense of purpose and become depressed. And it's very, 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 very sad. And I hope this ends soon. But I think that, from a nutritional standpoint, the way that, you're going to get yourself through this is to stay healthy and to eat whole foods, eat plant-based. You're going to keep your immune system intact and not to worry. I started this podcast saying that I was going to talk about cholera and the mumps and typhoid fever and leprosy. They're all things that are still out there. We don't get them anymore. And it's partially because of our immune system and how it's kind of changed over time. There are microbes that have been discovered on that were just reported in Nature magazine that, are millions of years old, lying dormant in the bottom of the sea, and they kind of dug them up and fed them again, and they came alive. So there's always going to be microbes out there. There's always going to be threats to our existence from potential infections. But some of the things we can't necessarily control, other than to be healthy and to let our own systems trust in our own bodies to be able to evolve. I am a huge believer in the body's ability to heal itself given the opportunity. And that means either from a broken bone or a pulled muscle or an infectious disease. We know that pneumococcal pneumonia, 80% of people can probably go untreated and live through it given enough time and just supportive care. We have antibiotics now, and we give those to people. And of course, there could be deaths from pneumococcal pneumonia, but given time, most bodies would actually heal from just about any bacterial infection. When the body's broken and the immune system is not functioning well, when the organs aren't functioning well, then that makes the body's ability to fight back less. And that's ultimately what gets us. We get frail, we get weak, and something either infectious or some sort of lifestyle disease ultimately takes us. So the treatment for all of this, or the prevention, is not early detection or to really hide from infections, but to make yourself strong and to make yourself resilient and keep your immune system intact. And part of that is keeping your mental health intact. And I can think of no better way than to keep your mental health intact than to be outside and to be in nature. I kind of laugh when I see people out with a mask on outside or even in their own yard. And I know there are some places in this country where some of the authorities have suggested that people wear masks out in their own yard for fear that there might be a COVID virus come, blowing down the street and people get it. But the reality of it is we need good microbes, and we need to share good microbes between healthy individuals. And if you're outside and there's microbes that are blowing from the trees or from the grass or from, the lakes or oceans where you are, you need those. And you need the sunlight. We know people that have low vitamin D levels are more susceptible to disease or they're mainly because they're more unhealthy to start with. You need to get vitamin D from the sun. Every time I say you need to get vitamin D from the sun, somebody comes up with, what about skin cancer? And we know that most melanoma, which is the deadly form of skin cancer, most of it comes from a bad sunburn at a young age. And 15 minutes of sun exposure, an hour outside running or walking or biking or boating, is not going to be what takes you down with melanoma. There are ways to cover up so that you don't get burned, but sun exposure is extremely important, and being exposed to microbes is extremely important. Being exposed to dirt is extremely important, as I say over and over on this podcast. But I, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, we have, again, we've put our in-house nutrition classes on hold so that we don't have to wear masks and pretend inside for now. We're certainly not going to have people do yoga in my office with a mask on. So we're not going to have yoga. We may do yoga outside. We are still going to have our running group, though. I will not cancel running group for any reason. I think it's ludicrous. You can't stop humans from going outside and getting good microbes and sun. And when you're running with other people, it's one of the most pleasurable experiences. And a great way to start the morning is to be with other people and to exercise and to get your heart rate up and to get your muscles strong together. It's a great way to you know, have a sense of accountability when somebody else is waiting on you to go out for running. And, you know, so our running group is meeting three times a week, and we're running for 20, 25 minutes out, 20, 25 minutes back. And, you know, nobody's left behind. Everybody waits. We start together. We finish together. And it's a great way to see the sun come up, and we start at 6 o'clock in the morning. And, it's a great, you know, it spreads a lot of happiness and cheer every morning. It's a great way to start your day. So I would encourage you, wherever you are, to get out in the morning and see the sunrise. And you're welcome to join us virtually on the Plant-Based Striders on Facebook. You can come over and join in and see pictures and post pictures. We have people posting pictures of their runs from all over the place now. And we'll share ours. The goal, ultimately, is to run a marathon with, you know, our newfound friends. I've picked the Treasure Coast Marathon March 1st, 2021. If that marathon doesn't happen for some reason, we'll find another one, even if we have to walk out 26.2 miles around here. But I think it's important to have a goal. And that's our goal. And anybody can do it. One foot in front of the other. Start your training now if you're starting from scratch, and little by little you can increase your distances. You don't have to run a marathon, but getting outside and exercise is extremely important. There are other running groups online, and quite frankly, I can't read too many of the comments, because people are always trying to find life hacks, it seems. And I don't really believe in life hacks. I think that eating whole food, plant-based, is the way to go. Eating, you know, your mangoes when they look like a mango, not mango protein powder. You know, people ask questions on, you know, I'm not feeling energized. Could it be that my lack of protein? It's not. If you're eating enough calories, you're eating enough protein. We only need 10%. People that are plant-based, plant protein is certainly safer than animal protein, but you don't need a whole lot of it, and it's not what gives you energy. Proteins are broken down into amino acids, and they're put back together on how you need them. So you don't need a protein that has the same percentages of essential amino acids as animal muscle or human muscle. You can eat you can get your amino acids, your essential amino acids, from fruit, vegetables, grains. It doesn't have to be in the same percentage. So it's not a problem. If you eat real foods, you don't need fake foods. You don't need fake mayonnaise. You don't need high fat. You don't need gooey desserts, because those are the things that caused problems in the first place. So whether they're a vegan version of a gooey dessert or you know, a regular version, there's still a lot of fat, saturated fat, simple sugars that didn't serve you well before, so it's not going to serve you well in a fake vegan form. So, you know, you just have to get over it and look again, what's your purpose? If your purpose is to be healthy, to be a lean, mean runner, then the gooey desserts and the fried foods, no matter whether they're fried vegetables or air fried, they really need to go. But people, you know, you have to evolve over time. Certainly when you're first starting out, you've got to give yourself a little bit of breathing room. But you need to, you know, kind of keep your eye on the ball, what you'd ultimately like, what's ultimately your goal. Again, what's your purpose for doing this? And, you know, it is to, you know, if it's to live as long as you can, as healthy as you can, then, you know, keep making your diet as whole as you can. I saw a couple of goofy things online. Something came across my YouTube feed. I don't know how I got there, but it's what makes Egyptians fat. And people, you know, somebody was arguing that, you know, Egyptians ate too many carbohydrates. And there were apparently fat Egyptians and back, you know, in the mummies, and because they ate too many carbohydrates. I would guess it would be those were the Egyptians that didn't have to do much. They were, you know, probably in the upper class that overate, overconsumed, and there was probably greasy food. I'm sure it was not. They didn't overeat grapes and flatbread, but you know, people again want to argue to make the best out of their bad habits, so to speak, and you know, that's really not. Again, you don't need to look for life hacks. I've not seen anybody yet that couldn't get their weight and couldn't get their cholesterol under control eating simple foods, you know, potatoes, vegetables, whole grains, fruit, and you'll do just fine. I saw a picture that looked really good on a post, and then I looked a little closer and it wasn't so good. And the dish, when I looked a little closer, was baked feta. So they had this cookie tray looking type of presentation. It was very pretty. There was tomatoes that were sliced and broccolini and looked like basil and lemon and onions. And in between it were these white round things, and they were feta, and it was grilled feta cheese. And, you know, it was obviously vegetarian, and so that was deemed healthy because, you know, somebody had to put the cheese because, God forbid, people just ate vegetables and they didn't have some sort of fat or protein. Of course, they look at the cheese as being a protein when we know it's you know, mainly fat. And so if I looked up at the nutritional value. Now, this was, again, looked like to me almost the size of a deck of cards, pieces of feta on this cookie sheet. So it would be, you know, probably 3 or 4 ounces a serving. I would guess it would be the equivalent of, you know, if you had a piece of meat, it would be a 4 ounce serving, so to speak. And but a 1 ounce serving of feta cheese has 320 milligrams of salt. People don't realize that feta cheese is one of the saltiest cheeses that there are. There's 6 grams of fat in 1 ounce and 5 grams of protein. So they're actually, if you did 5 grams, I actually didn't write down the calories of all that, but 6 grams of fat, 5 grams of protein, 80 milligrams of cholesterol. And of course there is the estrogen involved in making feta cheese. So that animal, whatever, if it was a goat, or in the United States, most of the time feta cheese is partially cow milk. But nevertheless, that animal was pregnant and making growth hormones as well as estrogen. So you get a dose of those with your grilled or baked feta. Easy substitution would have been, you know, to put a piece of tempeh or a piece of tofu on there or some mushrooms and call it a day and put a whole grain in there. Still would have been a very pretty piece of presentation. But again, people are so worried that they're going to be missing out on protein that they had to put that cheese in there. And it's like, oh, you really ruined it up, ruined it. So, you know, again, it's. I'm glad that there were vegetables. I'm sure that it was smothered with oil. If I were going to put those vegetables, I probably wouldn't put them in the oven anyway, just because, or, you know, I guess if I put tomatoes and broccoli on a pizza, I would have it in the oven, but it wouldn't have any oil on it. So you can put some sort of liquid on your vegetables to make the seasoning stick. So last night I did rosemary and garlic potatoes, and I just doused them in some soy milk and then seasoned them and put them in the oven on a parchment paper. So you know, you can get away with doing your vegetables without having a bunch of oil on it and adding a bunch of calories and a bunch of fat that causes vasoconstriction. It never ceases to amaze me. I guess you're in medical school or you're in fellowship. You got to figure out a paper to write, find something to study. And, you know, we're still beating supplemental estrogen and progesterone in postmenopausal women to death. And people are still arguing over whether that's a good thing. And that argument started way back in the 80s when we noticed that women at menopause, their blood vessel reactivity became paradoxical. So just like when you give people oil, their blood vessels contract instead of dilate. At menopause, women's arteries tend to want to constrict more than dilate, which is another reason to eat plant-based and stay away from oils so that you don't have that paradoxical vasoconstriction. But when you gave women back in the day, in the 80s, if you gave them estrogen, then you could actually improve endothelial function. And in some sense, you're restoring, probably, nobody knew the mechanism at the time, but you're probably restoring the ability of the blood vessel to make nitric oxide. We know now that you can actually eat your nitric oxide by eating your greens, you know, the drill, arugula, kale, and cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts, and spinach, and collards, and mustard greens, and go on, and cabbage. And cause and ultimately produce nitric oxide that helps with vasodilatation. But anyway, it was thought that if you gave women, you would fix that. Plus, you would fix hot flashes and bone loss. And it turns out that if you give women at menopause, if you give a woman estrogen at menopause, then you increase the risk of endometrial cancer. So the next thing that happened is they gave women estrogen and progesterone so that you could actually have people still cycle, have women still cycle, and that would decrease the risk of endometrial carcinoma. But then there was the risk of breast cancer. And then they finally, you know, did a longer-term study, and that study was part of where this particular study that I'm looking at now that just came out in the Journal of American Medical Association, where they looked at menopausal hormone therapy from the, you know, this long-term study, the Women's Health Study, and the Women's Health Initiative, with over 27,000 people in it. And initially, the study was divided into people that had a uterus that they gave estrogen and progesterone to, or people that didn't have a uterus and they gave them just conjugated estrogen. And then they followed them over time. They actually stopped the study early at 5 to 7 years, depending on the dual therapy was stopped at 5.6, and the estrogen therapy only was stopped at 7.4 years because those women, the women treated actually had a much higher risk of cardiovascular disease and fatal heart attacks. So the risk, so the study was stopped. But the observation continued, and some people, about 4% of the people, continued some form of that therapy, and then ultimately they followed those people, and then ultimately they just followed people long term after they'd stopped the therapies over the last years up in 13 years to see what happened to the people. And so they published this study that said basically that if you had a uterus and you got dual therapy, that you had an increased risk of breast cancer as well as cardiovascular disease. But if you had a hysterectomy and you took estrogen therapy, then you might have a slightly lower incidence of breast cancer than if you didn't take hormonal therapy. So what does all that mean? So should we put hormonal therapy back on the table? Well, the reality of it is you still have the risk of cardiovascular disease. So does it really matter if you get less breast cancer if you die of a heart attack? No. So we have to, again, the study was stopped because the drug therapy was worse for women, whether it's estrogen and progesterone or estrogen alone. It was worse for women from a cardiovascular disease standpoint, which is the number one killer in women is cardiovascular disease. So I don't care what it does to breast cancer. If it completely eliminated breast cancer, it doesn't matter if you're dying of a heart attack. It was great that these people, looked and followed and did all this work to look at, maybe it's not quite as risky to get breast cancer. People, so if you had a hysterectomy in your 20s and you had some estrogen therapy, then, maybe it's a little bit protective. But if you're postmenopausal, there's no reason to take estrogen therapy or estrogen and progesterone therapy. The risk of cardiovascular disease or breast cancer, it's not worth it. And again, hot flashes are great, treated great by soy. Soy? Soy is a phytoestrogen, an estrogen-like substance, an estrogen blocker, actually. So it will decrease the risk of breast cancer, decrease the risk of recurrence of breast cancer. And it also, because it's an estrogen receptor blocker, decreases hot flashes in women. So if you're a postmenopausal woman, and you're having symptoms of menopause, get your soy out. Trade your almond milk for soy. Add some tofu into your weekly meals. Add some tempeh. Add a little miso. And your life will be much better. But again, I think that we need to put this hormonal therapy, to rest in women that increases the risk of cardiovascular disease. And I'll take it one step further. And if you look at men and testosterone replacement, yes, it may improve some muscle function in males. But there is a black box warning that it increases the risk of cardiovascular disease and acute myocardial infarction. So in no way is testosterone a good thing for men. Supplemental testosterone, it's not. I think we'll find as time goes on, if the studies are honest and out there, God only knows, but prostate cancer will be a real risk for men that have done long-term testosterone therapy. So don't take your hormones, do eat plant-based, eat your estrogen, avoid eating dairy, which is a high source of estrogen and a high source of growth hormones and growth factors to spur on cancers, and life will be good. So that's, pretty much where we're going to wrap it off. And, I might as well say that, again, back to the plant-based striders, people that exercise decrease the incidence of breast cancer. Runners do much better with regard to breast cancer. Decreasing abdominal and visceral fat decreases your, these are very much visceral fat increases hormone production. So by decreasing those by running, you're also decreasing your breast cancer risk. So improve your mental health, decrease your risk of cancer, help somebody else out when you're out running. It's all a great thing. And if you'd like to know more about our practice, we are different. We are aimed at helping each other. And we are aiming to reverse lifestyle diseases through nutrition and exercise. Hop on over to our website at drdelaney.com. Anybody can be a member. We have all kinds of online opportunities. Our nutrition classes are on via Zoom. Thank you, COVID. We've learned to Zoom, and I record the nutrition classes. You can see me cooking either in our kitchen at the office or in my kitchen at the house. And unfortunately, you can't taste it, but then we do a PowerPoint talk. Those are all available to people that join our practice no matter where you live. We have a full-time registered dietitian that can help you. That's part of the practice. It's not something that, your insurance has to take care of. And great opportunity to join us to do to run, to exercise, to improve your mobility. So I hope you'll check that out. You can email me at jamie@drdelaney.com for further information. It's a pleasure being able to speak with you. Thank you for listening. I'd love for you to drop me an email or, go check us out, Plant-Based Striders on Facebook or my website. You can find out all kinds of information. You can sign up for our newsletter. But until next time, go outside and get some sunshine and be kind to others and do something for somebody else, you'll feel a lot better about yourself.